In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. I am Jim Hoffman. Guys, thanks for joining me and my guest today on the show. Be sure to follow us on iTunes and maybe leave a quick review or rating. You can get there by going to EMS Office. Actually, you can get there by going to emssco.com/iTunes. And that'll actually give you a direct link to the show page on iTunes. You can go and leave a quick review there. So today I am joined by Mike Smith, and we're going to talk a little bit about education in EMS. It's one of our favorite topics. You know, I always try to bring that up here on the show. Mike, thanks for joining me. I appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So before we get going into the topic, I want to let people get a quick kind of, 360 of you, what you're about and what you're at in EMS, so they know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I started in EMS in 1985 with my EMT card, and then a couple of years later became paramedic, and been a paramedic since October of 87 now. So it's been a long career. In that time, I've done everything from being a volunteer, a small township fire department, to working in a county 911 system, working in the emergency department, to teaching outreach education. I flew on a helicopter for 22 years, ran a paramedic program for about 10 years. And for the last 22 years, I've been a paramedic firefighter for the city of Grandview Heights on the near west side of Columbus, Ohio, and doing outreach education. And in the last 2 years, I've been a community paramedic for Ohio Health EMS, which is a large hospital system in central Ohio.
Oh, cool.
And so that's sort of an interesting sidestep into that side of EMS, which is very cool.
Yeah, well, that's something that's been going on, and that's something that I'm trying to also want to talk about one of these days as well, is that community paramedicine thing and where that's headed and what's going on with that. But I know today we had talked a little bit before the show, and something that came to my mind and really came to me because, you know, I frequent a lot of the EMS groups and educational groups and stuff, and I see people commenting on there a lot where they talk about studying and learning just to pass their state test or just to pass the national registry, and that you're not going to learn how to be a paramedic until you're out in the street. And then you get such a barrage of varying responses to that, where people 100% agree, people 100% disagree. And then there's people, I think like myself even, where I think there is a little bit of truth to that, but at the same time, you know, you also learn while you're in school with your clinicals and things like that. And I think a lot of it, I think, comes down to the candidate's approach and what they're looking to get out of the education.
Oh yeah. You know, you've been teaching paramedics for a long time, and you can almost tell walking into a room for the first time, the demeanor of the students and how they're going to go and how well they're going to study. And when I was running a paramedic program, during the screening process for students, you know, I would interview them, and I would make it pretty certain with them that, you know, this is going to be a tough year for you. You know, you're going to want to try and work, but you're going to have to study a lot, and the studying is the really difficult part, and making sure just for them to understand how difficult it's going to be. And eventually we got to a point where we'd have them on their application sign off about how difficult the course is going to be, because come along February or March where the students are really complaining, you know, it's winter, they come to class and it's dark, they go home when it's dark, their clinicals are long, they're tired, and, you know, it's the boring part of the class. I'd pull that paper out and said, see, you signed, you said you could handle this.
Yeah.
And after I started doing that, students' reactions were really different. But, you know, the students that put a lot of effort into it and worked really hard, I think they really understood that the skills I'm learning in class, if I learn them well, it's going to serve a great springboard for what I'm going to be doing in the field. Yeah, they may be just a little bit different, but if you learn the skills as the National Registry will test you if you're in a registry state, that sets you up well for the rest of your career. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit different once you get out there and you know, got a really serious patient. You may not do those circle wipes when you're starting an IV, but, you know,
yeah,
you're still going to do the basic part of the skill the way you were taught.
I think sometimes what happens with some students and the frustration becomes where they want to be a good provider and they want to do it like they see their preceptors do it. They don't, mm-hmm. when you're in the field for a while, even at just at the EMT level, you know, you get a flow of how you approach patients, how you do your patient assessments and stuff. And it's not necessarily where it's by the book. You're hitting all the points, you're doing the ABCs and stuff like that, but you're doing it in a way that seems more natural. And when you're new to it, you're not picking up on the fact that, yes, they actually are hitting all the points in that skill sheet, you know.
Right.
And when you're doing it, it's more robotic. And I think people are kind of in a rush. They want to get to be the salty person, the person that's been doing it for a little bit, you know. Yeah. And then I think what happens is, because like you said, they get so overwhelmed with the content they have to learn and the doing the skills by the book and doing, like you said, you know, doing the circles and everything, you know, mm-hmm. That they almost like say, well, screw it. I'm going to just focus on passing this damn test. And I'll worry about the actual part of it being, you know, in the street, dealing with patients, yeah. dealing with doctors, nurses, documentation, all that stuff. Once I get out and I have a job and I can kind of focus just on that. But for now, screw all that. I'm going to be 100% book person and just pass this damn test.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for the students that do that, that's not all that bad because they're learning all that didactic material and it's going to serve them well at some point. But yeah. We as educators, we need to identify those people and say, you know what, you're gaining all this material. You need to apply it. You need to get it out to the ends of your hands and your fingers and think, have that critical thinking and stuff like that. And that's where good educators will get their students to do that. I had a fire chief tell me, well, just teach him to pass the test and then we'll teach him how to be a paramedic. I said, how about if we just teach him to be really good paramedics and they'll pass the test?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think it comes down to.
Yeah. And I get sometimes you get these candidates that are, they've been in college, let's say, for 2 years, and now they decide, you know what, I'm going to take a turn. I'm going to be a paramedic, and it's almost like they're almost afraid to do the hands on stuff, and they're almost becoming like the professional students.
Oh yeah,
you know, and like you said, that they don't want to take it from the brain to the fingertips, and then when they get into the job and they're actually doing it, there's sort of a disconnect. They can't make that connection. And that's why I think it's important to have them realize that, yeah, you're learning it. It's a lot to learn. You got to kind of know everything by the book, but you need to start applying it when you're doing your rotations. You need to take lead mm-hmm. on calls with preceptors so that you get a feel and you can start to develop your own little flow on how you deal with you know, certain patients and call types and things like that.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I think it is a struggle. I mean, even just seeing people that take the test, you know, they're always looking for what's the best testing app, what's the best this, you know, what's the best study guide, what's, you know, because all they want to do is kind of memorize questions and memorize key points,
right.
You know, and just get through it. And I always try to encourage people, you know, I do a lot of like group coaching now, you know, with people, and try to right. encourage them to stop trying to use these apps as a memory device and use them more as a tool to build your knowledge, because you can memorize all the questions you want, but when you sit down to take the test, there's no guarantee that the questions are going to be worded or presented the same exact way. But if you know the content and you know the knowledge and stuff around what you're doing, no matter how they word the question, you should be able to figure it out and understand, right. looking at answers, how to get to the right answer by having that knowledge base.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You get that foundation, get that knowledge base, and then as they go and do the tests, and they used to drive me crazy too, you know, hey, I'm going to buy this one. It's only $58. Can I share it with my classmates? I'm like, you know, why don't we work on this?
Right.
Why don't we come back to the book and use the outlines and use
right.
the objectives in the front of your chapter and use yeah. those as a guideline.
Oh yeah. That's one thing. Like I have my membership site at TurboMedic. It's got a wealth of information about, you know, being an EMT and a paramedic and study resources and stuff. And I get people saying to me all the time, well, okay, well, how do I, when I use TurboMedic and, you know, I want to use it and I want to pass paramedic school. I was, listen, it's not a replacement for your outline at school. It's not a replacement for your main instructors or your textbook that they want you to learn from. It's meant to be, you know, an addition. It's meant to assist you to learn more, to find out more information, to help you grow right. as an EMS professional. It's not meant to replace that initial training.
Right.
Know? And people look for the shortcuts and they look for ways to, like I said, just to study to pass that test.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, I saw just reading some of the comments and some of the, I was trying to find it for the class. I couldn't, the threads go so fast in these groups. I
oh, yeah.
couldn't go back 3 days to, without
it like to find it.
Trying to find it.
Right.
But just seeing the people and they get so passionate about it, which I think is a good thing.
Right.
That people get so passionate about how they feel, you know, when they're approaching their education, because people, I think, are excited about the learning part of it, but they're equally excited about getting out there in the field.
Oh, yeah.
It's like it can't come fast enough.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And then you probably had students come back to you, too, once they get out in the field and they start working, you know, and they're maybe 6 months into their career and they've been out of school for 6 months, you know, you get text messages or phone calls from going, oh my God, I wasn't prepared for this. I thought I was,
right.
you
know?
But you are prepared for it. You're doing great. And, you know, as educators, I that's the part I truly miss about running a paramedic program is, you know, having the students come back and later on or share a tough run with them that, hey, you know, I remember you teaching us this, or, you know, I remember Ruth teaching us this, and, you know, Slade taught us to look at this when we saw this. And those are the things that really, truly, you know, make you as an instructor, make you feel really good in the long run.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's always, like I was saying, like even now when I do this group coaching stuff and I tell people and I give them, I try to push them away from using practice exams as a memorization tool, yeah, as more right. as a study tool, and they resist. And I try to guide them and tell them why I think that way and how to focus their efforts and stuff. And the ones that listen and then they take the test and they pass, they come back and say, hey, you know, you were right. And that was
right.
It made it so much easier to study and to pass versus what I was doing the two times before where I failed.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I was trying to memorize the questions and didn't do so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's exactly it.
So, you know, the other thing on this, Mike, I mean, you see a lot of things nowadays where they've got that flipped classroom type thing on now.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? I think that's in some ways, I think it's good, but I think for some students, it might be frustrating.
Yeah. You know, I did
especially
a little
like the one you said where they work all day and then they don't get, you know, by the time they get to class, it's night. They don't leave till it's night. So
yeah.
Where are they having that time, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's, you know, that was all coming around when right in the heart of our program. And I tried it a couple times and there were some students that really took to it. You know, they would take charge of the little group and lead in the research and want to present. And there was always the ones that sort of hung back. And
right.
They were probably the ones that were, they weren't doing poorly in class, but they didn't have the self-confidence to do it.
Right.
And I think it's a good idea to a certain extent, but I know of programs that do that, you know, two or three times a week in class, and I don't know whether that really helps or not. I think it's a good idea for the students to get out there and then present an idea and then have to research the pros and cons of it and
right.
then have a class discussion about it. And once we can have the students lead a discussion like that and have it a good discussion where people are bringing up, oh, hey, did you think about this? Or what about this differential? Why didn't you think about that?
Right.
Then I think that was a big help. One of the things I did towards the end of our program each year is I would present them a case, but I wouldn't give them all the information. You know how sometimes in scenarios, we have a bad habit of giving them all the information and they can take a look at the information and go, oh yeah, that guy's got a fever. He's got pneumonia. He's had a cough or he's got pneumonia. And you know, that's now he's septic.
Right.
And so what I would do is I would present them a case and I would just make up a patient and I would give them, pictures of the scene and pictures of the patient. And then I would give them, okay, you were called, to a house on the third day of the first cold snap of the year. It's not cold enough that people are wearing winter jackets, but you've got a job shirt on or a light jacket for an ill person. And you pull up in front of this nice house in a nice neighborhood, and there you go. What's your first actions? And I would have the entire class on like a bulletin board or in a discussion group write the first four things that they wanted.
Uh-huh.
And then as a class in class discussion in the classroom, they would have to pick three things out of those four that they wanted. And the class had to agree on it. So I got the students discussing why this portion of the assessment is more important than this portion. And I would just let them go back and forth. And then I go, okay, well, what about this part of it? And allow them to make those decisions, and then I would give them the answers that they wanted on the discussion board, and then they would have to come back a couple days later, justify what they thought that their first thought was or their first field diagnosis was, justify it, and then if they changed it with the new information, they had to justify that change. Why did you decide to change this? And then I'd ask them, give me four things that you want next, and then class, they had to discuss it. And I tell you what, that led to some very, very cool discussions with the students, and it got them to start critically thinking a little more, but it also got them to think outside the box a little more.
Yeah.
And, one student always in each of these discussions would try and lobby the rest of the group for an idea of what he thought it was or she thought it was. And sometimes it was. That's what my thought process was. But as soon as they stood up and started lobbying people for it, then I'd have to change the direction of the scenario to keep it moving.
Right.
And a lot of students came back later on. So that was really, really a good idea. And that made them think and made them decide on how they were going to do things. But, you know, I did that towards the end of the program where they were already starting to, during their clinicals, they were already starting to take the lead roles and things and already starting to help make decisions. As far as patient care and stuff like that. So it helped them sort of feel that way. And that was sort of flipping the classroom a little bit, but not really. But we'd have these discussions, and I think it helped point them in certain directions and make them think about things that they probably hadn't known before.
Yeah. I think stuff like that and the flipping the classroom thing, I think are good more towards, like you said, the end of the program where they've got a decent amount of knowledge, skills. Right. They've done some clinical rotations. They've seen stuff in the field. Because I think not only does, like you said, get them critically thinking about what's happening and then justifying what they're doing or justifying what they're not doing, I think that helps push them to where they want to be, as far as, like I had talked about earlier, where they want to kind of have that flow. They want to kind of have that, a little bit of that confidence and you know, ability when they come out into the street, that they're not this stiff, look like I just, you know, I'm brand new type thing. They look like they've been doing it a little bit. They know how to ask the questions. They know how, where they're directing their assessments and stuff, so that it looks more natural and they look like they've been doing it, and they look, and they're more confident.
Right. You know?
And I think that helps them too when they take the test, because then when they're looking at scenarios, they can think critically with the scenario that they've been presented with. And the way you describe it too, it helps them because they're acting on the information that they're given.
Right.
You know, they're not guessing other things. You know, they're acting on that information. And that's the one thing when people take exams that they don't realize that they start thinking, you know, three steps ahead, but that question they're looking at is asking for a very specific thing, and that's what they have to kind of stick to.
Right.
You know, is answering that question with the information provided and not what's in their head, what they think is going to be going
right.
on.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah, because a lot of times you jump to conclusions. You know, we do that in the field on occasion too.
Sure.
And you jump to conclusions, and then you realize, oh, no, that's not what that was.
Right.
But and I think that helps them in the classroom setting and doing this and having those discussions, because, you know, hey, you know, you're not wrong in your thinking here, but think about it just a little more and then justify your thinking. And as soon as you have them justify their thinking, then that helps to reinforce their thought processes. And then if they change their mind and go, oh, shoot, this isn't a diabetic emergency. This is, you know, something else. It's a seizure. And then you get them to justify that, explain why you made that change, and then you just reconfirm it. Yeah, absolutely, you're right. And that confidence starts building, and you can actually see the students that were sort of the wallflowers before, now they're starting to come out of their shell and they're really starting to develop.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool thing when you start seeing things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to try to wrap it up a little bit, Mike. I don't want to go on too much with it, but I do think, like we had talked earlier, I think there's a place for both of that mentality, you know, and I do feel like you had said that before they can get out into the street, they do have to know the basics, you know, they do to know the foundation of being EMT, the foundation of being a paramedic. Because you can't move on to just like with EKGs, you know, 12 lead EKGs. Everybody wants to jump to, you know, all these different, you know, different types of diagnosis and you know, false EKGs and false 12 leads. Before you just get to, let's just identify what the STEMIs are first, and then we can move on to imposters and things like that, you know. And it's kind of the same way. When you think of the entire, you know, EMT or paramedic program, is that people are like, oh, I want to get to that trauma. I'm like, well, let's start with how to stop bleeding first. And then talk about, you know, the amputation, you know what I mean? And and I think a lot of people are a few steps ahead of themselves, and, you know, they need to, I think, like you said, get that foundation in. And understand where that's being applied when they go out in the field. And I think things like flipping the classroom, scenario type training, like you were talking about, is fantastic ways. But I think this should be at the end of a program, or at least maybe at, you know, small chunks of that at the end of, you know, different sections of the class.
Yeah,
so that's apply that one part that they learned.
Right. Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, one other thing I was just sitting here thinking that I learned from Bob Page out in Missouri, he would, right in the middle of a lecture, you know, the death by PowerPoint lectures, he would put a dispatch run around their campus in the middle of a lecture somewhere. And I started doing that with our students. You know, I'd, at the beginning of the class, they were just broken up into squads. And then as they were becoming more ALS mindset, I would set them up as medics. And then I would dispatch them on runs around the campus. We had a small community campus, but we had students within the community that was really starting to help out. And they'd see me in the hallway and they go, are you gonna do one of those things where you're going to send them out on a run? Yeah, maybe I will today. Hey, can I help? And you know what? It made the students get in the mindset of, oh, hey, we're sitting here doing training. Oh, now we got to go on a run. And now I got to change my mindset a little bit. And right. It stressed them a little bit the first couple times it did it. But you know what? Now you have to start thinking in that mindset. And then we would do that scenario thing. Justify your reason. Justify this. And you know what? I think it helped. And I think it made them really start thinking on their feet. Yeah. But you got to have the experience. You got to have that background to be able to filter through all of your thought processes.
Yeah. I know when I was in med school, you know, they didn't do any of that scenario stuff like that, right. You know, but I do remember there was one instructor who, when we got started doing our clinical rotations on the ambulance, that he would ask some of us what kind of calls we did. And then he would kind of run through with us. Well, what did you do? What did you think? You know, what did the other paramedic do? What did it end up being? What do you think could have been done differently? What could you know, things like that. And that got a lot of us thinking into that mindset too, where it was, you know, okay, this is beyond just sitting in the classroom. When we had that instructor, we kind of knew that, okay, this guy might start asking other things, and I hope the hell I studied enough to answer those right. questions this time, you know? So, Mike, exactly. I really appreciate you joining me. Anything you want to share with anybody? Anyone connect with you someplace? You want them to hook up with you or anything like that? You talk any place soon?
I'm speaking at where is it? It's here in Central Ohio. It's an Ohio Health outreach class. People in Central Ohio, they should be getting that mailing soon. I can always be reached at by email at mds1820@yahoo.com.
All right.
I'll be going down to the MS Expo as an attendee in New Orleans next week. So, are you going to be down there? Or?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to New York, so it's going to be hard for me.
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
I wish I would have been able to do that, but
yeah.
And anyone interested too, Mike, I believe you did a cardiac assessment webcast for me a while back, and that's up on the emsseo.com website. You can go and watch that that video if you guys want. If just go there and you can just put cardiac in the search box, it should come up. We'll look in the video area, it should come up there. If you have any problems finding it, just text me and I'll PM me or whatever, and I will be sure to send you the direct link for that.
Yeah. Awesome.
And that's about it. Oh, Mike, one thing real quick before we end, I want you to talk about the outreach. What exactly is that? I'm just curious to know what exactly that all involves.
The Ohio Health EMS, who I work for and I have worked for a long time, we do outreach education all over Central, Southern, and Eastern Ohio. And we go out and do station meetings. We go out and do like mini conferences.
So that's for other paramedics and EMTs and stuff like that?
Yeah, nurses, physicians, all sorts of things like that, all EMS related. And then we sponsor at four different hospitals that are within our system. They're called critical care updates. And some of them they just drop in as just an update, and it's just some outreach education for people to come and attend. I've been doing them for about 28 years.
Oh, cool.
And it's a quarterly thing. And like I said, we've rolled them out to four other hospitals. And so oftentimes I'm out doing those and doing a lecture or doing some hands-on stuff. And it's just the topics vary from conference to conference or update to update. But I'm still out trying to speak at state conferences and national conferences and stuff like that. So all right, you never know, you'll see me. So. Oh,
cool. All right, Mike. Again, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, absolutely. Anytime.
And guys, any questions, comments, you can post them in the notes below. You can send it to me direct at contact@emsofficehours.com. Again, be sure to check out the show on iTunes. Leave us a review, rating, share with your friends. You can get there easily by going to emsseo.com/iTunes. And don't forget to go to the emsofficehours.com website, and you can check all the past episodes there and some other videos and stuff and content there as well. All right, that's it for me, guys. As always, I am Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.